I'd never given much thought to how I would die. But dying in the place of someone I love seems like a good way to go. I can't bring myself to regret the decisions that brought me face to face with death. They also brought me to Edward.
Welcome to Now Playing Podcast's Twilight Retrospective Series.
You better hold on tight, Spider Monkey.
Hosted by Jacob.
You've done us a great service, Jacob. Thank you.
Stuart.
He's not as perfect as you think.
And Arnie.
I'm surprised he took a break from Jedi training.
But be warned, this episode will contain detailed plot spoilers and strong language.
If we live through this, I'll follow you anywhere, woman.
Now you tell me.
Listener discretion is advised.
The only thing that can hurt me is you.
We hope you enjoy the show.
Come on in, Bella. You won't bite.
Speak for yourself.
Today, we're discussing Twilight? Really? The one starring Kristen Stewart, Robert Pattinson, Billy Burke, Peter Facinelli, directed by Catherine Hardwicke?
Yep, that's the very one.
Wow, not even a mention for Taylor Lautner.
He wasn't on the poster. He doesn't go in the opening.
Were you hoping it was the Twilight with Paul Newman and James Garner that nobody saw?
I'd rather, if it's up to me. This is Arnie, co-host of Now Playing, and I hope you enjoy disappointment.
This is Stuart.
And this is the co-host that's so sweet I could be your own personal brand of heroin, Jacob.
What a selling point. We're all looking for our drug.
You want to puke and maybe choke on your tongue? I'm the guy.
Well, thank you, silver level donors. I don't know whether it's silver to protect us from the werewolves or silver because this is going to be some kind of gem.
Is silver supposed to hurt vampires too, right?
Does it?
It depends on the lore. Look, we've got to talk about the lore of these vampires, but it's a whole new thing.
It sure is. She threw out the book, that Stephanie Meyer. She rewrote Bram Stoker and did a whole lot of else. We've covered the books. Twilight, the book phenomenon, is something we're covering. Jacob and I have committed to reading those very long Stephanie Meyer novels based on Twilight, New Moon, Eclipse, and Breaking Dawn, as well as a few other ones. But yeah, the movies feel bigger. In many ways, it feels like the movies took it to the next level.
It is literally a franchise to die for. At San Diego Comic-Con,
oh, no.
Somebody got so excited for Hall H, they ran across the street without looking and were killed. They were so excited to see this cast in person, they literally died.
Maybe they thought Robert Pattinson would run out and stop the truck.
Oh, they would have to bring out the stars. Look, those were my Comic-Con years, were the years of the Twihards. And yeah, the stars would come out because people were camping out for 3 days or more to see them. Like, it was huge, though I loved it. Like, after they did that Hall H thing, they'd all go home. And like, Comic-Con was kind of empty after they left.
Yeah, I remember people saying that they were ruining Comic-Con because it was becoming not about comics anymore. It was becoming not even about comic culture. Does Twilight fit at a Comic-Con? That was the argument.
I mean, they did manga adaptations of the books, so maybe.
And I do feel like they're closer to superheroes than, I don't know, Fright Night. What gets changed, as we've already stated, in changing the mythology of vampires is it becomes much less about horror and more about, well, melodrama. And I think that's the rub, is that many people say, not my Dracula, when they see what Twilight did to sparkling vampires.
And I'll say that was my response when I heard about this. And I feel like it's kind of my fault that we're doing these Twilight films because I'm always making jokes about them. But I remember like my dad's like, oh, you got to read these Twilight books about these vegetarian vampires. I'm like, nope, I want Bram Stoker Nosferatu style vampires. That is my Dracula. Like, I don't want these glittering things. But it's so ridiculous. I'm like, well, I got to watch the movies. I got to see how they go. And by the time we get to Breaking Dawn, I'm going to the theatrical releases.
Yeah, you are the fan.
In the loosest sense, like, I'm not a real fan, guys.
You are excited by this series. Let's just put it that way. It excites you, the thought of talking about it, of watching it. I am a complete and total newbie. I could have told you three things about Twilight before last week when I started reading the book and watching this movie. I don't know much other than vampire, werewolf, and a girl caught between them.
That is my question for you guys, because I don't want to spoil so many of the delights that are going to come during this series, but what do you know? Like, does Team Edward, Team Jacob mean anything to you guys?
Yeah, I mean, I knew that. I know Taylor Lautner hosted an episode of SNL where he really won me over. I thought he was very good at playing a lot of different characters and could do a backflip. I went, hey, this guy's going to have a career outside of Twilight. Turns out I was wrong.
Yeah, Grown Ups 2 and The Ridiculous 6 with Adam Sandler. It's a bad career.
Yeah, it turns out the other two are the two who have the careers after Twilight.
Yeah, Taylor Lautner is the Mark Hamill of the trio. Robert Pattinson is the Harrison Ford.
Well, I have to say Kristen Stewart's better than Carrie Fisher, but...
Less coke.
We're not sure of that. But that's all I know about this series is vampire, werewolf, love story. And at some point, I think there is a birthing scene that Jacob has talked about repeatedly as like the highlight of the series. So I'm looking forward to, I'm guessing it's Bella getting pregnant.
Just looking at the poster and the artwork, I always assumed that it was Rebel Without a Cause with fangs. Like, to me, it felt like it was a teen angst thing. Like, it will mostly be, you could remove all of the werewolf and horror elements, and it would still play because it's talking about that hormonal time in people's lives where they make melodramatic choices and choose the bad boy when they shouldn't. Yeah, Team Edward, Team Jacob. I don't know what it means. I'm not on a team yet. I'll try to pick one. I assume they're two different styles of rebel, and Bella will have to choose which one she wants to spend eternity with.
Judging by the posters, I think Team Jacob's the underdog.
Literally. You say Rebel Without a Cause with fangs. It is without fangs. Like, here's the crazy thing. And we talk about this on the Now Playing book review of Twilight. But Stephenie Meyer, like, we'll see some home runs in this movie. And she hit a home run with her first novel. Like, it was optioned before it was ever published by MTV Films. And they were never really able to develop it because they wanted to radically change it. And when Summit came along and optioned it, like, they had to really calm Stephenie Meyer down. Like, we're going to treat your baby good. Like, she does not have fangs. These vampires have no fangs. She did not want them dressed in trench coats and black leather. We're doing Underworld. Like, I wonder if that's an Underworld reference. Like, she didn't want any of that traditional look.
I obviously am the one who haven't read the books. I noped right the hell out of that. So, to me, it was a shock that they don't have fangs. And in fact, having watched the movie, I still wasn't positive they didn't have fangs. They don't really choose to focus on the violence here. It's often way in the background or off screen. This is a very soft movie.
Yeah, Pattinson has bad teeth, but they're not like vampire fangs.
Which is surprising that you say it feels soft, because yeah, I probably agree with you, but the director, Catherine Hardwicke, like the one movie I know of hers, 13, is not a soft film. Like, that is a hard look at teenage kids.
Yeah, I always want to see who's going to be the one to try and take the big novel.
We're going to get a different director for each novel.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, she's only doing this one that I found out later, but yeah, you've got the next Harry Potter, so to speak. Who is your Chris Columbus? Catherine Hardwicke is a little off the beaten path. She had done an indie about juvenile delinquency, basically being a 13-year-old girl and shoplifting and experimenting with sexuality and drugs. And I wouldn't say it's the most graphic movie, but it's definitely one to make you question whether you want to be a parent.
It feels a little reefer madness to me.
I haven't gone back to it, and I'm not a parent, so maybe it was a little bit overblown. But I remember it had a good performance from Rachel Evan Wood, and I don't know, I can see why you would want someone to bring a harder edge. What she brought to that teen movie, you would want to develop for a screen adaptation of the Stephenie Meyer book.
The biggest mystery to me, and look, I'm the fan here, so I'm watching all these extras on the Blu-ray, is Kristen Stewart and Robert Pattinson, because I think one thing you probably know, even if you haven't watched these films, like, they kind of are embarrassed by these, and like, it definitely gave people a certain image of who they were, and they've both gone on to surprise me with their work. But look, even if you don't like this movie, watch it with the commentary. It's with Hardwicke, Stewart, and Pattinson, And people allege that Pattinson is high. Like, they are not taking this seriously. Like, in interviews they're giving, like, they do not give any Fs.
Mm-hmm.
What I remember from this, you just sparked a memory, is that those two were dating in real life, which I never fully believed, and especially when Kristen Stewart came out of the closet, I looked back, and in hindsight, I'm like, yes, I think I was really right that that was a publicity stunt. But I also remember hearing that they both stank to high heaven, that, like, Robert Pattinson wouldn't shower, and Kristen Stewart never washed her hair, and it was matted, and just, they were both disgusting is what I read.
I mean, Robert Pattinson almost got fired because he was, like, taking this role, like, I'm going to be this super goth vampire, super emo. And his agent had to, like, fly in onto the set and go, look, you need to listen to the director or you're getting fired. You are going to lose this franchise. So, yeah, there might be something to, like, maybe they weren't dating, but maybe they were, like, they got along as friends and pulling some good pranks.
Yeah, you certainly want to sell to the young audience that the love is real. And so if that means creating a real life on set romance, or who knows, maybe it was a flirtation that happened. I mean, people hook up on sets all the time. It obviously didn't last. And Arnie, you say that about stinking, but if you read the novel, that's actually the crux of the romance.
That's true.
Edward loves Bella because of her smell, so...
Well, I saw that in the movie. There's the scene where he covers his face, and I'm like, did she stink in this first movie? I thought that came after the fame.
Yeah, she stinks real good in this first movie. And whatever we might think of the smell, big box office hit. This is one of those films that is critics proof. Every critic laughed at this, scoffed at it. You're saying even the actors don't take this seriously. But somebody did, because this thing made $200 million in the States and double that internationally. And is, for better or for worse, a touchstone of youth in the 2000s.
And we should say, not a touchstone to any of us. We were all outside of the age range. I will say that, like every major phenomenon, I had curiosity. I have owned the Twilight films on iTunes for a long time. They had a sale where I could get like all five for $20, and I bought it, but I never pushed play because I felt like at some point now playing was going to cover them, and I just bided my time. But I do have to say, I was curious coming into this. There is something here. What caused the phenomenon? A lot of times I will scoff at a youthful phenomenon and then I'll watch it and be like, you know what? I prejudged it too harshly. So I came in with a trepidatious sense of curiosity. The trepidation coming from the fact that if I actually like this movie, maybe I'm going to get made fun of really hard because I know this is a brown arrow for Jacob. But I did come in like really open-minded to embrace the world of Twilight.
Well, I came in having read the 500-page novel, so I knew that there were going to be... Again, I was very curious about how it was going to be told, how they would turn it into a two-hour movie from 500 pages. It was... Also curious, I think you're right, Arnie. Anytime something's a phenomenon, whether you feel like it's made for you or not, you do want to understand what the appeal is. And even though I didn't necessarily think I was ever going to like this, I wasn't into any of the vampire stuff. I didn't watch True Blood. I didn't watch the Underworld movies. You know, like, I wasn't into that. But you want to know why this? What was so special?
It should be said, we had this same question when we started Underworld over on the main feed. Is like, we heard from these people like, oh, it's Shakespeare with vampires and werewolves and it's so great. And I think we all said, we don't see that with that. So yeah, I guess that's my mission. Like, will this film make you understand the Twilight phenomenon?
I will say this, just up top. This is definitely one, whether it's Romeo and Juliet or not, I think it's a dysfunctional relationship. This is one that is much more about the chemistry between the leads and Kate Beckinsale and Scott Speedman. I mean, I definitely think you can tell the other series was made by stuntmen, and this is made by a director who has tried to dramatize, however, you know, hyperbolic it might seem to adults, the passion of youth in throughout her film. She also made Lords of Dogtown, if you ever saw that with Heath Ledger.
Skateboard movie, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And a very unfortunate movie with Amanda Seyfried, in which they tried to tell Little Red Riding Hood straight, and she had all these boys, and which one was the werewolf? Red Riding Hood? You don't remember this one?
Nope. Don't know this one.
Oh, it's bad. It's, yeah, I watched it just to be like, let's see her take on this. Oh, no. Don't go near that.
So, I haven't seen any of her films, but out of the ones you say, I guess only 13 is one I might like.
Yeah, I think 13 is the one to start with.
Yeah.
But let's get a plot. Arnie, tell them what happens in Twilight, and we can discover the phenomenon for ourselves.
In Twilight, Kristen Stewart plays Bella, a 17-year-old girl who has to move away from Arizona, where she lived with her mother, and move in with her father in the small, rainy town of Forks, Washington. Her father, Charlie, is sheriff of Forks and distracted while he investigates a series of animal attacks. Bella had spent some summers in Forks as a child, but had been away several years. Coming back, she knows very few people other than some Native Americans who live on a nearby reservation. One of those Native Americans is Jacob Black, a boy Bella's age, played by Taylor Lautner. Jacob doesn't go to Bella's school, though. She becomes the new girl at a school full of strangers. Her aloof attitude doesn't stop her from making friends with a clique that includes Angela, played by Christian Serratos, Jessica, played by Anna Kendrick, and several boys, all of whom crush on Bella. They include Mike, played by Michael Welch, Tyler, played by Gregory Tyree Boyce, and Eric, played by Justin Chon. Bella, though, only has eyes for her lab partner in biology class, the mysterious Edward Cullen, played by Robert Pattinson. Edward is part of a large family of adopted children, all of whom seem to be dating another teenager in the same family. However, there are 5 children, and Edward is the odd man out with no girlfriend. Initially, Edward acts like Bella reeks of BO, but soon he's flirting with her, saying they can't be together. Bella finds out why when Edward saves her from being hit by a skidding car, revealing Edward's super strength and speed. Edward is a vampire. The entire Cullen clan are vampires. But they are vampire vegetarians, meaning they don't feed on humans, only the blood of animals. Also, these vampires aren't killed by sunlight, rather, it reveals their vampiric identity of having sparkling diamond skin. The Cullens move to Forks due to its endlessly overcast weather, allowing the Cullens to keep their secret while going out in the daytime. They move around every few years so no one doesn't notice the family doesn't age. To wit, Edward is actually 108 years old, though he maintains the visage of the 17-year-old he was when he was turned. With this secret revealed, Edward and Bella begin to date, and Bella is mostly accepted by Edward's surrogate vampire family. Bella learns many vampires have their own special skills. Edward can read minds, but for some reason he can't read Bella's. Alice, played by Ashley Green, is able to see the future. Jasper, played by Jackson Rathbone, can psychically manipulate human emotions. The Cullens aren't the only vampires in town, though. A trio of human-killing vampires have come to Forks. The supposed animal attacks Bella's father is investigating are actually murders done by evil vampires James, James's lover Victoria, and their friend Laurent. James sets his sights on feeding on Bella, so the Cullens band together to protect her. Bella flees back to Arizona to escape the obsessive vampire, but alone, he tracks her there and bites her. Edward and his family arrive before James can kill Bella. The Cullens kill James while Edward sucks the vampire venom out of Bella's wrist, preventing her from becoming a vampire. Bella returns to Forks, where Edward takes her to prom, but they're watched by James's vengeful lover Victoria as credits roll.
And as they start, this movie seems to, again, 500 pages, you could say there's a lot of chatter throughout that. Big, thick paragraphs of people professing big thoughts. Here, they make it simple. This is a story about a woman that thinks that she doesn't have much to live for. And we see a deer in the forest being attacked by something, POV, looks like a human form. It's really telling us right off the top. They're signaling that this is about unhealthy relationships. A girl that doesn't want to live and how she finds passion and someone that might want to kill her.
I totally didn't read it that way. You thought she didn't want to live? I hear this whole beginning about I never thought about how I would die, but giving my life for someone I love. I realize this is going to come up later in the movie right away, but if she's giving up her life for someone she loves, I never took it that she was suicidal.
You don't think she's a bit, I don't know, if not suicidal, certainly, it's hilarious. When we see her in Arizona holding a cactus, like, by herself. I don't know what she's holding on to. She is not an Arizona girl.
No.
She needs to get to Seattle and be her emo self.
I got family in Arizona. None of them are that pale.
There's the one joke about aren't people from Arizona usually tan? And that really rang true here.
Yeah, she feels like a goth or an emo. She does feel like someone that is fascinated by death. And even before she finds out that the boy she's crushing on is a vampire, she's into that. Or at least that's the way I read it.
And I'll say that the way that this is structured, you get this opening thing with the deer and something jumping out and this girl saying she's willing to give her life for someone. Like, right away, because this isn't told in first person like the book, they're able to show us things that Bella hasn't seen or experienced yet. So I like this structure more. Like, I'll say for the first half, it almost feels, I don't know, Salem's Lot meets the CW. Like, it's got a horror vibe to it that you don't get in the book because you can never know there's a danger until Bella knows.
Most of this movie, though, is told from Bella's point of view.
She does narration, yes.
Not just narration, but the scenes she's not in feel really inserted because she is in most every scene. When she walks out of a room, you don't know what that conversation is. They introduce, as you say, Stuart, the killing of animals, later the killing of people, but that is it. We're never going to know what Edward's doing if Bella isn't in the room. We're never going to know what her father's doing except when she shows up when he's there. We're not going to follow him doing the investigation. This is a fairly tight first-person movie with inserts.
Yeah, but the inserts help. I want to just say, I want to support, again, join us over at the book review show, and you'll realize that being trapped in Bella's thoughts really can become quite limiting. And so to have moments of violence, I mean, it does feel more like a horror movie because people are killed, and it's just that blunt. The scene might only last 30 seconds, but we're seeing that something predatory is stalking animals and humans, and maybe it's the very same thing that seems to want Bella so bad.
Yeah, it feels a little weird, because like, if you're going to see this, you know the surprise with Edward that he's a vampire, and they're going to take a long time. I appreciate the tension and, like, the buildup, but I also wonder, like, what if you just got into it? Like, I guess you'd have to radically depart from the book, and Stephanie Meyer did not want that. She was on set a lot.
You mean like if we knew him right away, if we started with him biting into someone?
Yeah, because everyone in the audience already knows that. Like, we know that going in, who he is.
I think you'd know it just looking at the poster.
It's in the trailer, clearly. I mean, I knew that before this movie came out. He's like, say it, vampire. It's so I don't think there's anyone who could go into this not knowing, but yet they're going to tease it for the first half of the movie.
Is this the setup for True Blood? I never watched it, never read it, but is this the same kind of thing? Like, human girl?
I never read it. I wanted to. And it is very similar. I was thinking about True Blood because in there, vampires can read human thoughts, can't read Anna Paquin's thoughts.
Okay.
There's werewolves, there's witches, there's all kinds of different things, but vampires are out in the open in True Blood. That's what makes that novel. It's like, they call it coming out of the coffin. So, okay. I like True Blood a lot. I really enjoyed that series for the few seasons I watched, and I just kind of fell away from it when it started going a little too far, I thought. But no, there's definite parallels here that made me wonder which came first.
And you mentioned the werewolves. I've already stated on the book show, not really the love triangle of this movie, but I do think this movie does a better job of making us pay attention to Jacob. You wouldn't even notice this character in the 500 pages.
Yeah, in the book, he shows up very, very late to deliver some exposition, and that's it.
Yeah, here they tease the idea that he's maybe her first crush, that she is returned to Forks, Washington to live with her dad, a place that she used to visit as a child, and he remembers her and would probably be pursuing her to go to the prom, except he is a Native American. He lives on a reservation. He goes to a different school.
And it helps that he's with his dad, played by Gil Birmingham, who is actually a First Nation. And if you have Hulu, go watch Under the Banner of Heaven with him and Andrew Garfield, True Crime. He's really good in it.
It shocked me that he was in this because I have been watching that show. And it is the dark side of Mormonism. Twilight's sort of the positivity of Mormonism. But yeah, it's really surprising to see him here in this funny little role as a grandpa in a wheelchair selling her an old beat up pickup truck that she loves. And again, gives her a moment to be with Jacob because he's the mechanic that fixed it up for her. You just get more chemistry here. You would pay attention. You'd think that at some point in the saga, he's going to get his crack at Bella. You don't get that in the book.
But then we get to the school. Jacob doesn't go to that school, but Bella, I don't know. I didn't grow up in a small town. Maybe they go crazy when a new kid shows up at the school. Everyone is so into her. And this is straight from the book. Doesn't make much sense there. Does it make any sense in this film? Is it just because she's the new kid?
I've been the new kid several times and nobody gave a shit.
They didn't want to do a newspaper article front page about you?
Then again, I'm not a cute girl, but...
Yeah, let me ask Arnie, because we've already hashed this out. What do you think it is about Bella that's making so many people interested in her?
Because it's written that way. I honestly can see nothing about her that doesn't scream social outcast. The fact that she ignores friends while reading a book and that she doesn't want to talk to people... Honestly, I got thinking about it, and it just must be she's of a certain attractiveness level, therefore she gets to hang in the cool kid clique, because throw a pair of glasses on her, and there's absolutely nothing going for her.
Mm. Yeah. Actually, I think that is the appeal. It struck me funny reading it. I kept trying to dig into that prose and be like, what is it about her that would make Mike like her? And then, I don't know, there's even characters that really aren't here.
There's so many guys that ask her to the prom in that book.
Yeah, there's so many other ones in the background. They're always just macking on her. And what is it? I think it's the fact that A, she's a virgin, and B, that she is ordinary. The fantasy is for people that have lived life not in the spotlight to suddenly feel like the most desirable thing that there is. That seems to be the biggest appeal of the book, is that you imagine your, you know, unexceptional existence suddenly becoming celebrity.
I dare say, though, the way that it's played in this movie isn't ordinary, but ethereal, cooler than thou, maybe because she doesn't talk or seem to give a damn about what anyone around her is saying. She seems so disinterested that's coming off as a really cool type of aloofness.
I mean, isn't that Kristen Stewart, though? I feel like that's how she always is aloof and just too cool for the class.
I don't know that she's ever played gregarious, extroverted.
She got close in Charlie's Angels.
Okay, didn't see that one, but that would be interesting to watch. Now that would be the only reason I'd watch it, to see if she could convincingly play someone that wants to be in the spotlight, because she always looks pained to be viewed by the public. And sometimes that works for her. You know, she was Oscar nominated for Spencer. I thought she was pretty good. I've seen her do good work here. I'm going to say she's not doing good work in this movie. It is a crushing disappointment that actors that I think are pretty good in later work are not having much chemistry here on screen.
What are you talking about, Stuart? As the Collins walk in, and I believe you could pinpoint the moment that step-sibling porn became a trend. When the Collins walk in, this family that is all dating each other, slow-mo, perfect skin, perfect hair,
matching white outfits. Yeah.
Yes.
They want to keep a low profile, so they make it public they're dating their siblings.
I mean, I think they're just horny. They just got to be together.
I don't know that they want to keep a low profile. I just feel like they don't want to mingle.
No, but later on, Edward's going to say, I go to high school because the younger we start, the longer we can stay in one place. So they're trying to not draw attention to themselves. And yet they're dating their sisters.
But people are kind of repelled by them, too. Alice is called the weird girl. And you talk about Kristen Stewart. Those googly eyes, those lip movements she is giving Edward as she, looks over her shoulder staring at him. I want to know who she's imagining, because it is some of the most bizarre facial expressions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's crushing, right? I was clinging to the idea that I knew that this movie's romance would be goofy, but I thought I might be able to believe it because I could believe in the actors, but they had chemistry. Like, they were screen tested and they said, this is working. We're going to film this. Like, it's shocking, right? It's shocking how bad they are together.
I don't know if they were screen tested together. Like, Robert Pattinson says he's picked because of his cheekbones. Like, he feels like that's why he got the role. But he talked about, he's like, oh, I filmed an audition tape when he was in England of the scene in the meadow where they're laying there and his face is sparkling, except he didn't have another woman to do it with. So he did it with a guy reading Bella's lines. And Catherine Hardwick's like, thank you for not sending that in. So I don't know if they ever got together to see like how well these two work, because it's pretty shocking.
That would be weird. I would think you'd always want your romantic leads to really spend some time to make sure you have it, because yeah, maybe they look the part in still shots, but this movie is going to live or die by your belief in their undying love for one another. And that is the stake in the heart of Twilight.
I'll say I believe their relationship. I believe their attraction. I'm going with it because everybody is acting so unnatural. Like, nobody in the spotlight is acting human. And I don't mean that they're acting vampiric either. They're just not acting like anybody I've ever met acts.
My favorite is Jasper, Alice's boyfriend. Like, this pained, stiff look. And, like, I get what he's going for because I read the book, but it is hilarious, like, how stiff this guy is walking in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but Bella's father is not able to relate.
I like Billy Burke in this.
Listen, I'm saying these people are all fine in the heightened reality that has been made here. And as such, I completely went with these two's attraction. And Kristen Stewart, Bella, is attracted to Edward before Edward is to Bella, as far as I can tell. She seems to have a crush at first sight, whereas he's going to wait till science class to smell her.
Yeah, is Edward attracted to her? He gags when she walks into that class. I actually laughed at that point.
How could you not laugh at that moment? Yeah, when he walks into the lunchroom, he's staring at her with what looks like disgust. But what he's disgusted is, and again, if you read the book, there are just reams and reams of pages explaining this.
Oh, we're going to get a whole book, Midnight Sun, from his point of view to tell us again.
Correct. I haven't even seen the worst of it yet. But yes, how much her odor is driving him wild. It's pheromones.
Literally, the smell of her blood is what he's attracted to.
See, I thought that what we'd find out is I knew he was a vampire, probably had super smell, but I thought he was going to be that, like, she wore perfume, and it was the perfume that was bugging him so much, because he does act absolutely repulsed. He's covering his face. He's trying to move away. He storms out of the room. It does make me think, like, really bad BO or something is going on here.
I mean, Bella even sniffs herself.
Yeah, it does not sell as any form of attraction. The way Edward reacts seems like revulsion. And that's the meet cute, right? When somebody's gagging.
And he disappears, like he's just going to leave school for a week, mysteriously.
Right. While people are being killed. This is what the stuff they've made up for the movie that I think is helpful.
Yes.
Is that we suddenly just see a guy in a hard hat running around Grisham Mill, and he's jumped in daylight, or maybe it's twilight, but there is sunlight in the air. It's not the dark of night. He's attacked by figures, maybe the same ones that attacked that deer in the beginning of the movie. And we know that there are vampire killers. And if Edward is not at high school, maybe he is the killer.
He had to be, right? Or his family. I felt like vampires kill people, and I was ready to go with that. That they're going to try to sell us that these are good vampires, and that there's just randomly some bad vampires that have come to town. Ooh, boy, that's not a great murder mystery, especially when you can see who the killers are and it's not Edward.
Well, we don't see it in this first attack, but you're right. About half an hour later, we meet this useless character named Waylon, who's like seeing Bella at the diner and being like, I used to be your Santa Claus. And he's killed in his boat. We, by that point, know that it's not Edward, which I don't know. Was that a mistake? Should this be more of a Basic Instinct kind of tease of, Bella, you're falling for a killer?
Well, I think even if you don't know if that's Edward, like when you find out, oh, he is a vampire and we've seen these mysterious humans eating people, it's described as an animal attack, so it's got to be pretty gruesome, something a vampire could do. I don't know. There's the worry. Is he going to do that to Bella? Is our heroine in danger?
But I knew werewolves were going to be in here. They keep talking about animal attack.
They're not.
I thought for sure that what was going to happen is Edward was going to be framed for these killings, but it would be werewolves doing the killings. But we don't get werewolves in here. How many books had been written when this movie came out? Because there's a lot of...
All of them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because there's a lot of little asides about wolves.
Yeah, it's interesting now that I've read through some of the books and I've seen all the movies, like picking up all those things that just, again, I was mostly laughing at this film the first time I watched it. I didn't have to take it seriously like I do for now playing.
Yeah, they are, I think, heightening the importance of Jacob in this. He appears in more scenes in this movie than he does in the book because they know of his later importance. They have that knowledge as screenwriters. And it should be said, the screenwriter of this is not Stephanie Meyer. It's Melissa Rosenberg, who won Emmys for Dexter and Jessica Jones. She's taking the raw material and tweaking it so that it has more of a Hollywood murder mystery formula.
But the murder mystery is very far and back. I mean, it's brought up from time to time, mostly when Bella happens upon her father and her father's dealing with a body. This is all about the high school love saga.
Well, we're going to get another mystery, though, at the high school. You know, one of the students gets out of control in his car, is about to hit Bella, and Edward jumps out, stops it, saves her, and then runs off. Like, how did he have the strength to do that? How was he able to get over there so fast?
And this is where you're right, Stuart. You said this has a lot in common with superheroes. This could be a scene from any Spider-Man movie, right? Where Peter Parker risks his identity to save his fellow student.
Yeah, I definitely think that's how we are to look at Edward. That, again, like, it kills me that he's supposed to be attractive. All of that makeup and all that, like, maybe what, you know, the kids today, the boys wear nail polish and what have you. It's a different era than when I grew up in. But there's, like, he's very unattractive, but they're insisting by all of this weird acting that he is just as desirable as she is.
He is equally as desirable as she, I'll agree.
Right. But they're both supposed to be irresistible to the audience. And each other.
What really blows my mind is once Edward comes back and he starts talking, and I don't know what Robert Pattinson is doing. Like, half the time, I think he's just not even trying to cover his accent up. Half the time, I feel like he's trying to hold back laughs. Like, he almost can't understand him. Had to turn the subtitles on. Like, it's a mystery. Like, why would you take this role? Like, look, it's a huge franchise. It's a huge bestseller. You're going to make a lot of money. Like, put on a good face.
Here's my question. Are they trying to be campy? I mean, I'm going to describe some scenes. You know, they talk about, like, she moved to cold, wet Seattle, and she doesn't like cold, wet things. And then she'll touch his hand, and of course he's, you know, cold. He's one of the cold ones. And then later she's at the salad bar and fondling the cucumber slices because they're cold and slimy like him. Like, that's comedy, right? There's nobody that's, like, going to believe that's a hot moment.
I don't know which version you watched of this. There is an extended one that's like 4 minutes longer with a couple of extra scenes. They don't matter. It's weird because then there's also deleted and extended scenes that they didn't put into the extended cut that are extras. But like in the extended cut, there is this when Bella goes to visit Edward at his home. He has one of those rainmaker things that, you know, it's like in that tube with the pellets in there that sounds like rain. She's like, oh yeah, I made one of these with my mom when I had a pet chinchilla. We used its droppings to make the rain set. Like, it's just weird.
So hot. I missed that scene.
That is the cut I saw, but I took that as teenage
idiocy.
Gawkiness, like learning the ropes of how to flirt and things like that, and realizing talking about chinchilla droppings isn't what you do.
Mm.
And then we get this scene where Bella visits the Cullens called Bella's Lullaby with Robert Pattinson playing the piano. He actually is a musician. He actually, like, that's not his piano playing, but he actually learned how to play it. So, like, his fingers are doing the right thing. And apparently he did do some, like, guitar and singing that's in the background in some of these scenes. So maybe that's his real passion. We're going to get another dog star.
I will honestly say that the score in this, everything in this is weird, but it was unexpected. Like, the musical choices, I don't know what they were going for.
That discordant piano. Like, I love that.
You loved it. Okay, I can't say I loved it. Carter Burwell has done most of the Coen Brothers movies. He makes unusual choices of matching sound with image that just, again, keep me imbalanced in this movie. I'm as clumsy as Bella trying to process moments that I think I'm supposed to be swept off my feet by, but I'm more horrified and amused.
There's always something foreboding about that piece of piano music, yeah. I mean, we had this discussion with the book, Arnie. What's your opinion of this high school? Like, to me, it's just everyone's so clean and pure and, like, no alcohol, no drugs, very Mormon. Like, I don't know, these don't feel like real kids to me.
Well, I went with it because we're only introduced to, like, six of them, and it's Anna Kendrick and a lot of people who look like they'd actually hang out with Anna Kendrick. And so I felt like these were, you know, the prissy clique. They'd hung out with Cher in Clueless. So I'm sure some people were doing drugs. This looks like a pretty big school. We're only dealing with like six of the students.
This is a little town, Forks.
Yeah, I guess 3,000 people. But this isn't a high school movie where you're looking at all of these people. This is Romeo and Juliet without fangs, I suppose.
And yet I feel like a lot of characters are introduced at this school.
We do, but they're given one-liners. It doesn't feel like an ensemble piece. And so that none of them are smoking weed or shooting up or anything didn't call out to me. I don't feel we leave the one lunch table in the cafeteria, is how I'll say it.
But I'm going to return to my question. You say Romeo and Juliet. Is it, or is it like the Mel Brooks version of Shakespeare? Like, are we supposed to be laughing? I do wonder.
I'll say there is a certain point where I am definitely laughing, but for the first 45 minutes or so, like before the actual romance kicks in, that is when it becomes laughable to me. Again, kind of Salem's Lot meets CW. I'm kind of like the mysterious vampires killing people and this slow revelation that Edward's actually just like those killers. Like, yeah, it's melodramatic, but I'm in it for the first part.
I'll right there with you, Jacob. This entire first 45 minutes, I'm like, okay, I came in kind of expecting the worst, but this is actually okay for what it is. It is super melodrama, but if I throw myself back to 12, 13 years old, around the time I discovered Heathers and things like that, maybe I would have gone for this kind of emo, quiet type of movie, and I'm completely into this movie during this flirtation, during all the will they, won't they, during her almost getting smashed by a car. And then even with Taylor Lautner saying, like, my tribe was descended from wolves and there's a legend about people.
Yeah, I want to see that next episode with those wolves.
Yeah.
When you say you're into this, what do you mean? Like, you find this...
I'm entertained. I'm intrigued. Like...
I'm not laughing at it at all.
Yeah.
Oh, come on. Really?
Really?
I'm laughing at moments, like, again, whenever Kristen Stewart's got to do her horny I'm in love look, like, I'm cracking up. But no, again, this first 45 minutes, I think, is pretty solid, more or less, for a teen supernatural drama.
Exactly.
I definitely feel like it's a parody of those, like, not another teen vampire movie.
No, we'll get Vampire Sucks later on in response to this.
Yeah, I feel like this is the beginning of that. I feel like it's closer to that. I think we're given permission by the way that these scenes are directed and acted. Again, Robert Pattinson, the way that, like, they're, like, studying worms at a greenhouse field trip, and he's like, we can't be together anymore. Like, this is a soap opera. This is a parody of a soap opera.
No, it is just a soap opera. I don't know the last time you watched it. I checked and Marlena is still Satan as of like a year ago. So this is exactly how it is. It does not feel parody at all. It feels on the nose.
Yeah, but you're talking about soap operas as if they're taken straight. Like, you laugh at soap operas.
But the target audience doesn't.
Are you sure?
Yes, because I used to be babysat by one, and she just loved her stories.
Yeah, my grandma was super into them and took them seriously.
My mom watches that one, yeah. My mom, like, I'll hear her giggling. If I'm home at 1 o'clock, there's still one soap opera on, and yeah, she's always laughing at what's going on there. I feel like, I don't know, I can't imagine the person that could take this seriously.
Well, I'm taking the first 45 minutes of this seriously and thinking, not bad.
I can't imagine taking this first 45 minutes as, like, yeah, the kid with the wig talking about descended from wolves, and she's Googling cold ones and, you know, fondling cucumbers at the lunchroom salad bar. Like, that's just, it's beyond ridiculous. And again, signals to me that the filmmakers know that they don't have Wuthering Heights here. We know we don't have Rebel Without a Cause. This is not a classic. This is trash. Let's go ahead and appreciate it as such. It's just not enough of it. I wish it could even be funnier.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I feel like Catherine Hardwick... Look, I'm going off what she says in that commentary. And it's a funny commentary track, but it's also got all that, like, all the stuff I came to hate about directors' commentaries. Like, there's an armadillo in the background because I'm from Texas. Okay, great. Thank you for explaining that. That's what was needed. But, like, it felt like she was giving it her all. Like, yeah, you've given me this melodramatic, like, silly vampires with no fang story, and I'm going to try to do my best with it.
I don't feel they have any chemistry.
No, they don't.
No.
If you were going to do your best with it, you would believe that there's attraction, even though all of this is a bizarre, absurd, and sometimes mockable.
Actually, I believe there is attraction there. I believe that these two are the most attractive of each other's groups, and that because of that, they are attracted to one another. I fully believe that in their performances.
And again, I'm kind of just getting caught up in the supernatural aspect of this. Like, we'll see Bella go into town and she's going to get gang raped and Edward's going to fly in with his Volvo.
She doesn't get gang raped. I mean,
they're going to, like, that's what they're threatening.
Okay, yes, but the way we talk about this show, you know, we go like, and she's going to go to the dance. So no, some people come and attempt to accost her.
Yes, she's rescued. Again, how do you make a stalker weirdo vampire attractive? Have five stalker weirdo guys attack her first. And so because she is quote unquote saved from this back alley attack, we're supposed to think that Edward is heroic because he's been following her wherever she goes and watching her while she sleeps and never, like, closing his eyes.
That is creepy. Now, once this attack happens and the two of them start to go to dinner together and we find out that, yes, he has been watching her while she sleeps, all of a sudden, I'm like, I see where 50 Shades of Grey came from. This is a really disturbing relationship. I understand now how you end up with an S&M lawyer out of this, is because everything that goes on here is very covetous and very ownership, and he's the one in control. Like, we shouldn't be together. Not that I don't want to be together, but we shouldn't be together. The way he is like, we will, but we won't, and keeps playing with her feels like gaslighting. This whole thing feels sick.
Oh, they fully gaslight her during the accident. They're like, no, that's not what happened. This is what happened. Like, Edward is awful. Like, we've seen stuff earlier. Was it a dream or not with Edward in her room? It played it as a dream, but no, he's been really there stalking her. It's very patriarchal. Like, he's always telling her what to do. And I gotta imagine this is a very Mormon influence. It's a very patriarchal religion where men, the dad, the husband is the ruler of the household. They'll tell you, oh, it's about equality. But no, he has priesthood. He has the power of God and rules the household and tells the family what to do. So, like, I do see that seeping in here with Edward and the way he treats Bella.
Without judgment, though, I want to point out that you mentioned Heathers. Heathers is a satire about suicide. It had a very snarky take on teen relations. This is played straight. We are supposed to think that this is, yes, a tortured man that Bella has the opportunity to save and be with. And, you know, can they bridge this impossible gap that, you know, the title really references this time between daylight and night where they can be together, because he is a creature of the night, she is a woman of the day. And yes, that's the whole crux of the tension.
Well, A, I hate the fact that vampires are not damaged by sunlight here. You just get to see their diamond lizard skin. But B, I'm very confused, Stuart, because you just said it was being played for laughs, and now you say they're playing it straight. Which is it? Are they? I mean, do you think they're playing it for laughs, or do you think they're playing it straight?
I can't figure it out. I feel like the director is laughing at the material. It's what I actually feel like. But the material is itself earnest. And yes, I can't tell. Ultimately, this movie isn't subversive enough to have anything to say about unhealthy predatory relationships. If it were, it would be really cool. It would be easy to make what I'm watching really cool if Hartwick was given the room to really comment on how unhealthy this supposedly beautiful romance is.
And this is the point. you know, we're going to get the big reveal, like the thing that everyone knows, the sparkling. And I should say, I mentioned this on our Now Playing review. My wife read all these books as they were coming out. She loved them. They were great in her opinion. And then she watched the first film. And it gets to this moment where jumps on Edward's back and they run super fast into the sunlight and reveal that sparkling. She turned it off and has never watched any of the other movies. Now she did. She's going to try to watch them with me again this time. But this was the moment where she turned against the films and is like, no, this is too silly. Like, I guess whatever you imagine is just always going to be better what's on film. And when it's this silly, like, yeah, you're not into it.
I didn't mind the sparkling as much as I thought it would. I kind of pictured them as looking angelic. I thought there would be a halo of light around him with sparkling.
They're supposed to look like they're on fire. They sparkle so much. Like, it's actually supposed to be kind of scary. But here, I could barely see the sparkles.
Yeah, I didn't see that. But you mentioned him running. There's the time I laughed, is when he is running up a mountain with her on his back. All of a sudden, I'm getting a flashback to The Price is Right, that yodelay, yodelay, yodelay.
Yes, I know the game.
Because he just goes right up the mountain completely at a singular pace that does not feel like human legs are involved, but like he's on some kind of mechanical lift.
Well, because he is. Because that's obviously where the $40 million of this special effects extravaganza has gone to.
Look, this is no Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. There's nothing graceful about this tree hopping.
Agreed.
Anytime she's on his back, this movie's effects are awful.
Hold tight, Spider Monkey. Yeah, it's awful.
Yeah. Oh, calling her Spider Monkey, that's hysterical to me. Is that a term of endearment?
So again, I ask, is this mocking the book? Is this being subversive with material? You couldn't take these moments seriously, right? It's just too stupid looking.
Yeah, here's my problem. This is where it really loses me, because love story, and now we're just going to speak in just the most grandiose terms where I don't know why they've, like, she's going to be unconditionally in love with him. Why?
Right.
And all it's going to be is her asking questions about vampire life. The next 45 minutes of this movie is an exploration into vampire life through exposition. We're not going to be shown anything. We're going to be told, oh, we're vegetarian vampires because we only eat the blood of animals. We never see them kill cats or squirrels or whatever they eat, but we're told this.
Deer and bears, according to the book. Yeah, I want to see Edward take down a grizzly.
We're never shown anything about vampires. Edward just talks and talks and talks. The one question I had is answered, which is, if you are this ancient being, he was turned into a vampire in 1918, was it?
Yes.
And if he is 90 years old when this movie comes out, why the fuck would he go back to high school? They do answer that question, sort of, but I still can't believe that a 90-year-old would want to go back to junior year.
Yeah, they give some explanation. You do get a great shot. This isn't in the book, but it's in the movie, of this, like, huge wall full of graduation caps showing you all the times they've graduated. And the only lip service they give is because it lets them stay in an area longer. They already all look like they're well into college. Like, yeah, it's a bad reasoning, like, why they have to go to high school.
I mean, this could be really interesting, though. I mean, again, a 90-year-old man that has to pretend he's 17, the pain of that is something worth exploring in a more subversive, less melodramatic movie.
And I think that is one thing that I do enjoy. Like, if we ever get into other vampire films, like Nosferatu is one of my favorite. And I remember seeing the German 70s version. That was the first one I saw. And yeah, just feeling the pain of a vampire. And like, you'd think that'd be cool to have all these powers, but they're actually pain. And it's like, I think there's something to mine there. I don't know if they really get into it. I mean, they have to cut so much backstory with this Cullen family, Carlisle, Esme, Alice, like all their stories are cut out here. And that's some of the more interesting stuff. Like, why did they choose to become good vampires?
I just assumed it was because they're the hero of the story and you wouldn't go with them if they were killing people. Although, you know, in a superhero movie, you could always have them kill bad people.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, we'll see them kill by the end of this film, but it's another vampire. I don't know if that counts as killing people.
I don't know if we really see it either. There's some flames, some out of focus shots, some quick edits. I do feel like what is a surprise both on the page and in this movie is, you're right, 50 Shades of Grey came out of this. You would think that this would be about forbidden love. I mean, that's what vampire stories usually are. Like, let's explore erotica in this supernatural way. And this is instead about virginity. This is about a woman that keeps teasing the idea that maybe she'll get turned. But at least by the end of this first movie, Bella is never going to get bit. Bella is going to be curious about this life, but never actually step out of her comfort zone.
There's also a vibe that if a man, like, goes after a girl, takes her virginity, that's a bad thing. Because Edward, like, if we make love, I'll be so turned on, I'll have to eat you, is basically why he won't do more than kiss her.
And she loves that. She loves the idea that he's being driven so crazy. That is the fantasy, is to be so desired and so unattainable. I get to remain aloof, even though everybody wants me. It makes her look very immature. I guess I would put it that way. At the very least, it feels like Bella has a lot to learn.
When she is 17 and in high school, so, like, that's real. Like, so maybe it's not a problem. I don't know. It's not the ideal, but it does feel real at times.
Oh, let me be clear. I mean, I can like characters that have conflicting ideas. Like, I don't think that the characters have to reflect your values in order for you to like them. But I do feel like Bella has no chemistry. I feel like Kristen Stewart and Robert Pattinson, when they're scaling up trees and all of this, like, laughable all the time. Not one good say anything moment where you feel like, wow, that was kind of cool when he held up the boombox. There's just, it's not in this movie. So you're left wondering, is this a parody of teen romance?
I'm not finding anything in a parody sort of way. Now, I was with it the first 45 minutes, but this next hour and 15 is pure excruciating dullardness. I laugh when they're running up the hill because of the bad special effects.
Exactly. How could that not be a parody? How could that not be the moment where they fall in love turned into a mockable satire?
I mean, there are funny moments, like when she goes to meet the Colons and they're trying to make food because they've never used their kitchen before.
Oh, God. Your name's Bella. We'll make Italian. We've never used the kitchen before. Oh, my God.
No, I like that stuff. Like, again, anything that leans into, like, actual vampires, like, they don't need food. Like, I don't know. I was kind of amused by that. And then you get, again, what could be some intriguing drama, but it doesn't seem to go anywhere, probably because they want to wait for another movie. But Rosalie, like, she, like, you get this big family, but Alice sticks out, and Rosalie sticks out, and Carlisle sticks out to me. And she's got a real grudge against Bella. I don't think we really know why. It seems to be played off as because she fears that this is going to expose them as vampires.
Yeah, I can't tell what that is. I just thought it was attitude of somebody else infiltrating their clan.
There's more jealousy too, because keep in mind, brothers and sisters love each other a lot in this family. So I think in the book you got more of that, and this movie sometimes wants to downplay the incest vibes. But she doesn't like this human crouching in on her brother.
But aren't you guys incredibly bored by this? I mean,
no. Bored, no. This is fascinatingly, bizarrely bad, or I don't even know what it is. Is it? I cannot figure out whether it's subversive or stupid.
Yeah, I'm pretty much in the camp that it's stupid, but you can change my mind. I don't know, but I am. Look, the love story is what's bad to me. This romance, the fact that they just speak in platitudes, and I never really, except she's got some good smell on her blood. Like, that is the only reason they're together. But yeah, I'm laughing. Like, again, grab on, spider monkey. Hell yeah, let's do this.
The only time I start having fun again is after the Cullens dinner and they decide, hey, it's raining. We're going to take you to a baseball game. Now that is some high comedy.
All of this is comedy, but you're right. That is next level. Like, oh my God, what is boring? What is boring in all of this? You've never seen anything like it. I can promise you there's been no vampire storyline to do this before.
What's boring is having the two of them just endlessly dialogue about vampirism. Once the two of them decide to become a couple, there's nothing going on of interest. I wish those murder vampires were a bigger part of the story.
I mean, they're scaling trees and they're, you know, like, yeah, the family is cooking them Italian dinners. Like, to me, that's, there's still a lot of comedy going on in the background. But I agree, the romance is pathetic.
And it's all about the romance. The cooking Italian, it didn't interest me. The climbing the tree, yes, that was kind of funny because I was thinking to myself, what if she was afraid of heights? Could he not date her? What if she smelled like she did but didn't like heights? And if she fell, could he save her? I know he's fast, but is he faster than gravity? These are the thoughts going through my mind because I'm not engaged.
Her big character trait is that she's a klutz. We see her during volleyball yes. and slipping. Like, yeah, she's going to lose her grip on Edward's back and fall.
But yeah, vampire baseball, we talked about this a bit.
I got to ask, like, I knew this was coming because I seen this, but oh boy, revisiting it, it again shocked me. Like, baseball game, this is what's going to kick off our climax. Like, would you have ever put any money down on vampire baseball?
Mm-mm. No, but the music that plays during it's pretty good. I like the song.
It's awful. That's why I'm cracking up. Like, I want all nine innings played in real time. The yeah. way they shoot this, like, yeah, running through the forest to catch the baseball, all of it. It's great.
It is. There's not even enough people to play a team. I'm not quite sure who's against who, but yes, this is rather amusing. When the two jump in the air to both catch the same ball and collide, I am chuckling during this. This is the first thing to grab my interest since the two of them started dating, is watching the family. It makes me realize I'd much prefer an Edward family movie to an Edward Bella movie.
So what you're saying is that the couple is too drab to be laughed at?
Yes.
Okay.
There's not anything here that feels like a parody to me. There's not anything here that feels like a joke to me. There's not anything here that feels subversive to me. The thought of amusement with this movie is foreign until you start talking about the baseball game.
And help me out. True Blood takes this same scenario and makes it great because...
First of all, it's intentionally ironic in many regards. It also has many more interesting characters. It's an ensemble story. You're not stuck with one romance that is very drab in that as well. I don't like the central romance there either.
Did you want to know more about the Cullens? Because you do get a lot more of them in the book, and we're going to get a lot more of them throughout.
So there's a chance this series will get better.
I'd rather have more of that than more of Bella, is what I'll say.
You're never going to get away from Bella.
It doesn't mean I want specifically, I'm not pining for it, but I think that would be a better movie.
Yeah, I agree. I think the central romance, which is, again, the thing that I assume would be the thing we would be asked to care about, feels like the least explained, the least compelling element of this world. But it's the background stuff. It's the weirdness going on throughout it that keeps me engaged.
The fact that we're basically in an X-Men film, like whatever your trait was, your main character trait was when you're alive is enhanced when you're a vampire. So Alice could see subjective futures because she had abilities of premonition when she was a human. Edward could read minds. Jasper could control moods around them. Like all of a sudden I'm like, oh, this isn't vampires. This is X-Men.
Mm-hmm. Or at least the craft. Like it definitely feels like that kind of 90s horror movie that wasn't a horror movie, but more about like teen angst. But the weird thing is teen angst movies are about how much you hate your family, and this family is playing baseball together. That's just, I never played sports with my mom. I can just say that right up front.
Yeah, the whole high school thing again bothers me. I thought coming into this that Edward would just be a townie, that he wouldn't be in the high school. That
I imagined him having no family. The Drifters, the rebel without a cause, they never have connections. That's what makes them so desirable, is that they're this phantom.
Yeah, and it is called out that they are weird to have such a big coven. Like, you get, again, maybe it's more apparent in the book, but, like, it's rare for vampires to hang out in bigger groups than two or three. I guess they have Sith rules. There could only be two.
But at this baseball game, the rival vampires finally show up. And, of course, the Cullens knew that vampires were in town killing people. They knew it wasn't them, but here's the first time getting together, and the one that looks somewhat like Chris Hemsworth in a really bad wig, James, is able to smell Bella as well.
Yeah, they're going to play a friendly baseball game. Like, we're actually going to have to find teams until James smells that stank of Bella.
Always Bella. Bella just can't keep him off of her. And I wonder what it was like for her in Arizona. I just feel like she should go back there and just experience being a social outcast again for a while.
That hot sun, the sweating, she really did stink in Arizona.
Yeah. At any rate, you're right, Arnie. I think you mentioned the fact that it feels out of nowhere. This movie cut the backstory that James has with Alice. But if you read the book, there is a very definite reason that they are here, and it is retribution for past events. And here, instead, it just feels like Bella is so desirable. Any vampire within a mile of her is just going to start flaring their nostrils and going crazy.
What are the past events they're trying to avenge in the book?
Oh, you go back like to the 1900s. Alice was in an asylum and James loved the stench of her blood and was coming after her. So they turned her into a vampire so he would lose interest, and he wants revenge for that.
Which again, if that were the case, the simple solution here, the way to protect Bella from James is to do what she's saying she wants done. Turn me into a vampire. And yet that is just unthinkable to Edward.
I think it's interesting that, like, yeah, as a vampire, he's like, there's so much you're missing out on life. She always is talking about how she's getting old. But again, I think there's interesting ideas there. I don't think they're really given the forefront to dwell on them and really explore them, though.
Yeah, it would take a more talented writer and a director with, at the very least, more freedom to explore these eccentricities. Not make it so much about how we have this undying love for each other. This climax is all about Edward, you know, professing again and again, reassuring Bella she's the most desirable thing in all the universe, when in fact it would be more satisfying to have it be more like a thriller with, you know, somebody's trying to kill me.
And I think that's the way when MTV had the rights to this, when they optioned it, they wanted to go. And it really feels like Stephenie Meyer like is like, no, we got to stick to these books. She's on set. She makes a cameo in that diner at one point.
I saw her. Yep.
But yet now we have to go and have this really heartbreaking moment. I don't think it's deserved. Like what Bella tells Charlie to be able to leave the house and go back to Arizona. Like, I don't want to end up like mom is so cruel. Like, I don't know how you don't have a reconciliation scene like where she apologizes for that. Like, it is so mean.
It is awfully mean. And I think because she almost dies is why they don't have a reconciliation. Like, almost dying means never having to say you're sorry.
Edward says before they leave, oh, he'll forgive you because he could read minds. So it's like, it's resolved super quick.
Yeah, to be clear, the mom lived here in Forks and I guess divorced him specifically because she hated this life and is now dating some baseball player. Again, if you can get with the baseball, That's the crazy thing.
Yeah, she's with a minor league baseball player in Florida while he's at spring training. Yeah, in the book, there's a reference like she painted the kitchen yellow because she wanted to see the sun. So I guess that's why she ends up in Arizona. She wanted as much sun as possible.
Yeah, I really do hope that her new husband squares off with this vampire team at some point. Yes, as typical of a teen angst movie, you don't want to end up like your parents. You don't like your parents. You're running away from your parents. The thing that feels subversive or weird about this is how much this family, the entire clan, feels like an ideal. That Bella does want to become a vampire and join specifically the Cullens. She doesn't want James to bite her. She wants to be with the Cullens specifically.
Well, I do think if James bites her, he's going to drain her. I mean, he wants to torture her and film it to get revenge for what happened with Alice, so that she's not going to get turned from him. But again, going back to that theme of Mormonism with Stephenie Meyer, yeah, if the Cullens are the Mormons, they're the ideal you want to be. It's like Mormons love doing missionary work. They love knocking on your doors and bugging you to give you a Book of Mormon and get you baptized and join their church. Like, but they are so like, nah, you should just be a human. You can't join us.
Yeah. It's again, the whole tension relies on we can't be together. We're caught in this nether region of neither daylight nor night. And so, yes, the finale here is that she gets, it all happens very fast, much more so than in the book, but she gets lured back to Arizona under the false pretense that her mother is in danger, when in fact the villain is just playing an old video.
And that is a very long drive that is a blink in this movie. You can't just go from Seattle to Arizona.
Sure you can. You can just run like Fred Flintstone and the car's there in 30 seconds.
I mean, in the book, they do fly back to Arizona. And also, like the Cullens, because they're vampires and like they're just the greatest at everything, they love speeding. And they love Volvos and they love speeding in their Volvos. Like, Bella's always telling Edward to slow down because he loves driving so fast. But we don't get that Fast and Furious moment in the film. We instead get a fight at a ballet studio?
A room full of mirrors. This is the premonition part. Alice predicted this would happen. So we find out that Bella, who, as all I can tell, is clumsy and all left feet, was a ballet dancer at some point.
When she was like 8 or 9, yeah.
How many injuries did she cause?
Yeah, I can't imagine how badly that went. And so now she is being attacked in her old ballet studio, and Edward is there to protect her, of course.
Again, the bizarreness of this, that we've had a baseball game, and that's kicked off this climax here, and now the big to save the day is I gotta suck the venom out of your blood. Like, you got bit by a rattlesnake, I gotta suck the venom out, and that's it.
There's like this conversation about making a choice. Is it on the table to just turn her into a vampire because the venom is in her?
Yeah, once the venom's in you, yeah, it burns and you get really sick, but eventually you'll become a vampire. So that is the debate. Let her turn and never see your family again, or suck the poison out.
And keep in mind that that's how Edward got turned. He got a disease in 1819 and was gonna die. So he had no other recourse but to turn into a vampire. It was either that or perish from pandemic. So yes, Bella could just die here. Why not turn her? She wants it anyway, because the kink of this movie is, you know, spooning. You want to sleep with me, but I'm just not going to let you do it.
Yeah, chastity, a big thing in Mormonism.
Yes. In the end, I won't have the scent of virginity if you actually take me. So we'll just keep playing this game of you want me so bad, and then I kick you off me.
And like you said, the violence here, yeah, you see something going on in the background. Like, I think Alice rips off James' head, and then you see, like, Evan and Jasper, like, just throwing planks into a fire. They got to burn the body.
I don't know if she ripped his head off. She broke his neck. I mean, it's pretty tame.
Look again. You got to rip the head off.
Maybe it was in your cut. I saw the shorter cut.
I saw the longer cut. I didn't see his head removed. What I see is a lot in the background where they're killing him. It looks like they're stabbing him with stakes, like beams that have come out of the wall. They're then setting fires, but it's all off screen. It's not the focus. The focus is going to be Bella and Edward making doe eyes at each other. And that's why I say this movie is very soft, as you had a murder plot going on here. And the murderer is going to just be basically dragged off screen, and you have to pay close attention to realize he's even dead.
And I will say this will be remedied. Like, we will get some extreme violence for a PG-13 film, in my opinion. We'll have to discuss when we get there.
This one feels very PG.
Yes, I agree here it does.
I don't feel like this, like, last-minute climax of the second vampire. You know, they did try to tease it throughout the movie. I'll give the screenwriter credit. They tried to build the suspense about it. But ultimately, this is not a thriller. You're not going to feel the tension of this. It's all, you know, just again, just a way of getting back to Edward having to suck the poison out and more lingering scenes in hospital rooms and professing undying love.
Yeah, that whole idea of temptation, we talked about the book cover being these hands holding an apple. They'll replicate that earlier on, like Bella drops an apple and Edward kicks it up into his hands and holds it in that pose, reminiscent of Adam and Eve and temptation.
Only, again, it's not like you get to bite the apple. It's like you get to sniff it, you can lick it, you can, you know, maybe like scratch the skin of it. It was surprising. Arnie, I was wondering, did you think she would get turned? Did you think they'd at least sleep together?
Well, I don't know that they can. If you go back to Anne Rice, vampires can't get it up.
Oh, Edward gets it up eventually.
Okay, I wasn't sure even if they could. They get the one moment where it seems like they're going to have sex. You say Bella's a virgin. I did not get it from that scene.
She's super horny.
I thought that she probably had sex in Arizona.
Yeah.
With who?
Does it matter? I assume she had friends there. I mean, I don't know a specific name. I figured she had a friend she left.
Well, I'm just saying that you're assuming she's an experienced woman, and yet she has always been defined as being isolated and on her own. And again, when every boy is saying you've got a smell, to me that is, I want to take the virgin.
I never thought virgins had a smell, so I don't know anything about virgin smell.
It's a metaphor. I mean,
metaphor, yeah.
Yeah, come on. Like, you get it. Like, there's something more exciting about being the first one.
I wondered if Edward could have sex. I figured he could, but if he got horny, he was also going to get hungry. That seemed to be the scene.
Yeah, that's the danger, is if he gets too hot and heavy, he might bite her.
But would she get turned? I had no thought of her getting turned in this movie. Maybe in the future, I wonder, but no.
And there is one last tease as we go to the prom. She's got her broken leg. Again, I love the fact that they use how she's a klutz to cover up all the injuries. She fell down the stairs and rolled out the window of a hotel in Arizona. But now she's at the prom, and Jacob's back in the film. He's got a message. Like, now we got to set up the sequel.
And this is one of the many Wolf references, because Edward's going to show up and be like, I leave you alone for 2 minutes and the wolves descend.
You only believe that, though, because you know the later movies. If this movie were standalone and they never made another, you would not think this guy was a werewolf.
No, but because I know what the later movies are, I'm catching these references.
But my granddad paid me $20 to tell you, like, break up with your boyfriend or we're going to be watching you. Like, that's a bizarre message to give anyone, most certainly on prom night. Why don't you find this absolutely bonkers?
I do, in a melodramatic way that I think teenagers will actually go with.
And I do find this bonkers. Like, the fact that we get a baseball game as our climax, crazy, that we're going to go to a ballet studio and the big moment is sucking venom out of someone's arm. Like, it is so bizarre. I don't know if I relate that to being a parody, though. To me, again, what's more fascinating is a Freudian read of Stephanie Meyer's, like, sexual life or thoughts. Like, yes, it's bizarre in that way, but parody, I don't think of.
I feel like if you were going to honor what was on the page, you wouldn't make it look as campy and silly as this movie does. Now, you could argue they didn't have the money to make it look better.
I was going to say, you're giving a lot of intent to what I take as incompetence and lack of budget.
Well, but is that fair? Again, Catherine Hardwicke is not incompetent. She's made bad movies too, Red Riding Hood. But I mean, I wouldn't just presume because we're watching bonkers that these people are idiots. They may just be saying, let's throw this hash in the fire and have fun. And that's what I can't figure out whether there isn't a more subversive movie burbling under the surface of this chaste, silly melodrama.
I think you're picking up that you have two leads that are not taking this seriously. And again, that is the vibe I got from that commentary track. It is not very insightful, but it's pretty funny. Like, at one point, Robert Pattinson, like, they get to the moment where he stands and the sun is sparkling. He's like, oh, you're supposed to CGI six-pack on me. Why didn't you do that? Like, they're having a lot of fun making a lot of jokes in that commentary. And maybe that's how it was on set. Maybe it's because these leads couldn't take it seriously. It does come off just askew.
It means you can't have the book that Stephanie Myers wrote on screen. I mean, like, if you can't buy into the romance, Arnie, I'm hearing you're saying you sort of did, but I don't know why. They don't have one good scene together.
No. Here's the one good scene at the very end. I do like this. If you're super into Twilight, here's a great frame to have is when, you know, oh, I'm going to turn you. And he bends her down and goes and just kisses her neck. Like, I think that's very sensuous. Like, I think they hit it there. Now, that is just one shot in a 2-hour film. Like, there should have been more of that.
Yeah. There should have been more or less. That's what I can't figure out. I either needed a whole lot less of this or a whole lot more of something else. But yeah, what a weird film. And a tease for more. We know this is not a standalone film. We're here to cover 5 movies. James might have been killed. His friend Laurent just kind of gave up and was like, I'm over these fools. But he had a chick hanging out named Victoria, and she's the one watching from the window, plotting some kind of vengeance, I assume.
And this is hilarious, because those three actors, they were super into this, because, like, working paycheck, big franchise, and the fact that Victoria, that actress, is like, oh, I hope this is successful so I get to come back. Your character's gonna come back, you ain't.
Oh, they recast?
Yep, they go with someone bigger.
Oh, well, I know where I'm feeling when you say you need a whole lot more or a whole lot less, Stuart, but let's see which one you come down on when I say Jacob, Stuart, do you recommend Twilight, Jacob?
You know, it's interesting, when I first watched this, and I still have a similar opinion, this film came out in 2008. There was another big film that came out in 2008.
Iron Man?
Iron Man, yeah. Which, that would kick off, I think, bringing a lot more people, and stereotypically, like, no girls allowed in the comic book realm, but I think by the time you get to the Avengers, like, superheroes are for everyone. And like, when I watch this, forget the vampire gothic romance, I'm like, oh, this is X-Men. They made X-Men for a female audience. Yes, I'm going into traditional gender roles, but they made X-Men, they made superheroes successful for a teenage girl audience. And I feel that now, like, that is more the power, like, okay, this love story, if you're a 16-year-old girl, this, like, saying I unconditionally love you is probably super romantic. Like, to me, that's, like, just problematic at my age. But I understood this. Unlike Underworld, I'm like, oh, okay, I get why Twilight's a big thing after I watch this film. Now, does that mean you should watch it? Like, this is a very silly film. Except for the first 45 minutes. There's some silly parts, but I feel like that first 45 minutes promises you something that you are not going to get by the end of this. You get into baseball and ballet, and I do love the bizarreness of this one. Like, it is an uneven film. It is a silly film. It's a confusing film, bizarre. Like, all those adjectives apply to this, because, yeah, I would never structure a story like this. And so, like, that is part of the fun. Like, every time Kristen Stewart's got to do kissy lips, and every look that Robert Pattinson's got to give, like, it's all funny. And so, like, I still find myself entertained because of the badness. So, like, Green Arrow for, like, a little bit, and then Brown Arrow for the rest. But that's still a recommend.
Stuart.
Yeah, I've been mulling it over in my mind. What is this experience? Because I, unlike you, Arnie, I definitely wasn't bored. I mean, I definitely think that this thing is an original, and it comes out of amateurism, really. It's the fact that Stephanie Meyer is trying to rewrite vampire lore and obsessing on things that, if it had been written directly for the screen, there's no way they would have made it. They would have never made a movie like this. You feel that there are talented craftsmen trapped into honoring a bizarre book that went on these really self-pitying tangents about, yeah, juvenile love. And because of that, it is a way more interesting movie than it probably should have been. And I do feel like sometimes this movie is crazy enough. All right, vampire baseball and some of the other crazy moments to make you just want to Brown Arrow this. I do think I got a lot out of seeing it. And I do think that it was an interesting take on the material, but it doesn't quite save Twilight from the stench of cheesiness. I feel like the director tried to at least hold their nose and tell the story that was on the page. Sometimes they made that look amusing, but it never felt like a good romance. And I do feel like at the end of the day, you would want to believe in the power of love, even if you didn't buy the plot. And because Pattinson and Stewart are not good together, and I would argue never have one tender moment together, maybe that scene at the end, Jacob, with the prom, by that point they had long lost me. But you get what I'm saying. Every meaningful moment between the two is maybe intentionally camp. I can't figure it out. Were they trying to mock the novel? It's hard for me to believe that anyone that liked the novel would feel like this honored what they had envisioned in their head. It's a bizarrely bad movie that I almost want to give a Green Arrow to, but I'm going to say not recommend.
And when any of us break out the B word board, I think you know which way this is going. But I saw pretty much the same movie Jacob did in that first 45 minutes. That first 45 minutes led me to believe this was a Green Arrow. And I was, again, wondering, would I have to take ridicule because I was going to unironically Green Arrow this notorious film? And yet, I was also happy. I'm like, you know what? The first movie in a franchise is quite often the best, or at least the second best. And so if I'm coming in here and this one isn't so bad, then maybe this isn't going to be as painful as I expected this to be. But then for the last hour and 15 minutes, it became clock watching. I laughed a couple of times. I laughed during the baseball. I laughed during the mountain climb.
Come on, Spider Monkey.
I laughed at Spider Monkey.
Yeah, there's so many bizarre scenes.
No, there's three. I mean, there's a lot of bizarreness, but only three got a chuckle out of me. The rest, I'm just like, this is not good. This is not interesting. I'm not engaged in either way. I'm not engaged in a I'm laughing at you way, nor am I engaged in a hey, this is actually interesting way. Instead, it just lost its thread and became so much exposition. I have hope that I could actually Green Arrow, unironically, one of these movies in the future based off the first 45 minutes here, but this one is a stake in the heart Red Arrow.
I'm confused why you guys, both of you, felt like the beginning was the better part. It didn't have the baseball. It didn't have all the wackiness.
No, but it was the more traditional part. I'm like, okay, if you're going to be a rote vampire teen romance, like, this is more or less working for me. Like, if this was a Stephen King adaptation, Green Arrow, like, one of the best.
Okay. I feel like the whole time, I mean, we can all agree this is a bad, these are two people that should not be together. We talked about obsession, codependency, control. It's like Stephenie Meyer took this bedazzler to like unhealthy relationships and tried to sell this as a fantasy. And this movie, more than the book, shows how bad it is, which is, again, why I would call this subversive and got more on the brain than people give it credit for. It's fascinating that we're seeing through the eyes of this director an unhealthy relationship being portrayed as eternal.
It's unhealthy, but again, is it totally foreign to what teenagers would do? Like, that is the dilemma for me. Like, again, the idealism is bad, but like, it feels kind of real at times.
Oh, teenagers definitely want to rebel against, I mean, a lot of it's reactionary.
And like, girls want to date the bad boy. Like, that is a thing.
I can rescue them. You can see it in Bella the whole time. I can save you from your pain.
Mm-hmm.
So that is always the conflict for me with this. I'm like, yeah, on one hand, it's super real. On the other hand, I never want my daughter to act like this.
Yeah, again, a director that could lean more into those ideas could actually deliver a Twilight that is recommendable. But I don't want a rote teen movie. I want it to be weird. I want it to go strange places.
It's going to go strange places, trust me.
Okay, well then there's hope for this series to getting a green from me.
Yeah, and if it goes completely off the rails wacky, I will be amused. But here, there was too much of the tales of 1918 and being sick and being turned, and not enough chinchilla poop.
Since we have been on the main feed chronicling the other werewolf and vampire saga, Underworld, by comparison, it's pretty clear they're very different, ultimately, in aims. It took me watching this movie to realize, oh, they might on paper look like the same thing, but obviously Underworld is a movie made by stuntmen.
Yeah, and this is more successful, like, Shakespearean. I don't know if it's 100% Shakespearean, but I watch this and I get the phenomenon. I didn't get that from that first Underworld film.
Yeah, same here. I understand why teenagers could be really drawn into this. I only sort of understand why people would like Underworld based off that first film.
Yeah, it's all about images in Underworld. In this, I imagine there is, again, we say young because it's naive. It's naive to think that you can enter this relationship and it end up happily ever after.
At 17 to have found your soulmate that you'll be with forever. Come on, no.
Yeah.
I know two different people who were dating their current spouses when they were juniors in high school.
I'm not talking about people that have found love in high school. I'm talking about evil, manipulated boys that are predators and killing things and saying, oh, I'm so lonely, come save me. Like, this is, it's going to end badly. I'm already on Team Jacob, but I can't know that until I see Jacob make his move, which I presume is next week, new moon.
Yep, werewolves love that moon. Though new moon means no moon's out, right? It's not a full moon. That's what werewolves need.
That's correct, yes.
Yeah. We'll cover the sequel next Friday, and we'll put out the book review the day before on the same podcast.
So thank you for your support. Jacob Stewart, thank you for joining me. Gotta go. Got a vampire to kill.
This is the last time you'll ever see me. I won't come back. And you can go on with your life without any interference from me. And it'll be like I never existed, I promise. I'm just sorry I let this go on for so long.
Once again, thank you for supporting Now Playing.
I can read every mind in this room. Money,
sex, money, sex, cat.
It's your support that keeps Now Playing operating.
I'm never gonna get enough of this. We don't get tired. We don't have to rest or catch our breath or eat. I mean, how are we gonna stop?
We hope you enjoyed the show.
I'm glad I amuse you.
Go to NowPlayingPodcast.com each week to hear our hosts review the original novels on which these movies are based.
You're not really into this, are you?
I actually really just want to go to this bookstore.
Help us spread the word about this show by leaving a 5-star review on Stitcher, Podbean, iTunes, or your podcast store of choice.
But I can't help myself. You are so mouth-watering.
Now Playing Podcast is produced by Arnie Carvalho.
I'm down with the kids.
Oh yeah, dude. You're the bomb.
Associate produced by Jason Latham.
I like my own personal brand of heroin.
Now Playing is edited by Heath, Santiago, and Arnie.
Bella, they're not even alive. It makes me sick. Better you really be dead than one of them.
Now Playing credits read by Brock.
Everything about me invites you in. My voice, my face, even my smell.
The opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the individual hosts and may not reflect the views of Venganza Media Incorporated.
Can't trust vampires. Trust me.
Venganza Media Incorporated is not affiliated with, and this podcast has not been prepared, approved, or licensed by any entity that created the film analyzed herein.
I have to report a crime. The Collins. They've done something terrible.
All movie clips and music included in this podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders. They are included here for the purpose of review and no infringement is intended.
Oh, you see, there's no law broken here.
Agreed. But does it then follow that there is no danger?
Now Playing Podcast is an exclusive trademark of and may not be used without the express written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated.
I have never met anyone more prone to life-threatening idiocy.
Now Playing is a Venganza Media production, copyright 2022, and no part of this show may be reproduced, repurposed, or redistributed without the written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated. All rights reserved.
My time as a human was over. But I never felt more alive.
And it helps that he's with his dad, Billy Burke, it's Billy, right?
Yeah, Billy Burke is her dad, and Billy Black is his grandfather, yeah.
Billy Black, yeah. Billy Burke's the actor, yeah.
I don't like the central romance there either.
Did you want to know more about the Collins?
Yeah, you keep saying the Collins. Yeah.